This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
It's Paul and Macca here on Saturday Magazine, Saturday the 27th of April. Macca, it's currently, what's the temperature outside? Oh, I think it's about 18 degrees. Yeah. Who we got next?
So our next guest is Dan Holmes, and Dan is a journalist with The Mandarin, and I have to disclose this. I am a reader of The Mandarin. I like what you all do there. Welcome, Dan. How are you today?
Oh, I'm really good this morning. How are you folks?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Good, thanks, Dan.
We were talking, you know, much earlier in the show about Elon Musk and Elon Musk versus the E-Safety Commissioner. I reckon Elon is a very interesting group of people. because not only is he inconsistent, he's a hypocrite, but he takes positions sometimes that when you look back at positions he's taken in the past, they're totally at odds with what he might be saying now. This is a really bizarre and interesting story and subject, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think it's, in some ways, it's been a predictable affair, I think. I mean, this is something that's been sitting over, the sort of free speech on the internet issue, if you like, is something that's been, if you like, a bit of a sleeping giant in the media space for the last few years. So we've got a lot of issues with this. First of all, people like Elon Musk, as you've noted, who have perhaps an inordinate amount of power in this area and can determine what is and isn't acceptable speech unilaterally. And then you've got the cross-jurisdictional issue, which is one of the things that Musk and his supporters have been pointing to in terms of the near impossibility of enforcing a takedown order somewhere like Twitter.
Because it's, I mean, you know, Twitter, X, it's free. So, you know, we have a choice. We don't have to pay to use it. We don't have to use, you know, pay to post it, to, you know, whatever. Clearly, you know, it requires advertising support. Yet, if you asked Elon what his definition of free speech was, and then I asked you what yours was, I think the only thing that would be in common are the two words free speech. Everything else would be different.
Yeah, and I think particularly in the Australian context, well, and I think the US context as well, a lot of what people are talking about isn't necessarily free speech, but it's consequence-free speech. Because there's nothing stopping people necessarily from saying terrible and hateful things on the internet at the moment, but they have an expectation that they can do so and people have to accept that because it's an honestly held opinion, when often what happens, and justifiably a lot of the time in my opinion, is when people spread hateful things on a place like Facebook or Twitter, they get dragged for it. And I think that probably should be the case. But I think a really important concept here, since you've mentioned Elon Musk's perception of free speech, is something called Popper's Paradox. Have you encountered this before?
I have, but I think for our listeners...
yeah, you need to explain it for me, Dan. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, so Popper's Paradox is the idea that unlimited free speech ultimately leads to a severe curtailing of free speech. And there's a great historical example of that. If you look at the Weimar Republic,
yes,
they had an extremely permissive political sphere. And a lot of people are, of course, very aware of, and particularly we've had, you know, there's been a lot of discussions recently about the Holocaust and Jewish history and the understanding that there was this very tense political fight going on in Germany at the tail end of the Weimar Republic between people who were on the far right, i.e. Nazis, and people who were on the far left, i.e. communists. And ultimately what that resulted in was the Nazis seizing power and curtailing free speech and even freedom of existence for a lot of people.
So the extreme there that, you know, free speech, none of us want to shut down free speech, but what I think the situation we're facing is that social media, that everyone uses it, well, pretty much everyone. So many people have accounts on different platforms, and those platforms, you know, depending on where you look, have varying degrees of moderation. And I mean, like, moderation by the site owner. We can't rely just on that. I mean, we've shown not just with this, but with a whole lot of other issues. And this is where the role of the eSafety Commissioner comes in. How would you, Dan, characterise the role of the eSafety Commissioner in this?
First off, Dan, before you answer that question, what's your take on the situation itself first? Yeah. Do you agree with the eSafety Commissioner, or do you agree with Elon Musk's position?
Look, I'd say in principle I agree with the eSafety Commissioner, but that sort of comes with a bit of an asterisk.
Yeah.
So I think in principle the eSafety Commissioner is right, and I think, you know, numerous politicians across the spectrum have also pointed out over the last week that it's entirely reasonable that a sovereign country should have the capacity to determine what is permissible speech when you're talking about things that have the capacity to lead to violence, for example. And I mean, this is often the kind of sticky wicket that you come to when you're talking to people who do want to limit free speech to some extent. What people want to limit isn't necessarily the kind of free speech that would generate useful political conversations, but things like calls to violence or calls to radicalization. Those are the kinds of, you know, quote unquote free speech that we might want to limit to prevent those ideologies from eventually taking over other forms of free speech.
Because it could be they've just chosen the wrong subject here, but with the stabbing being quite emotive.
Exactly. Yeah.
They could have chosen a different topic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's that, but there is also a sort of legal complexity to this, both in terms of the way that the internet infrastructure kind of works. Like, it's quite easy for you to give Twitter a takedown order and say, we don't want this content hosted in Australia. And in fact, Twitter have responded to that. They have taken down the content that's hosted in Australia. The issue becomes then that people who are sort of maybe a little bit more tech savvy might be familiar with virtual private networks,
yes,
or VPNs,
yes,
which effectively allow you to mimic your computer or mimic your internet connection coming from somewhere else. So a lot of people use those for all sorts of reasons,
yep,
generally to sort of hide who they are interacting with something or to prevent them from being tracked. And again, I just want to be really clear that, yes, there are people who use that for illegal purposes, but there are a lot of extremely legitimate reasons that people use virtual private networks as well. But what that means is that Australians are actually still able to access that content by selecting an IP address for themselves in, say, the United States, where that content is still available. The eSafety Commissioner deems that unacceptable because the content is still visible in Australia, ultimately. But there is very little that you can do about that legally, because we're talking about then interfering with another country's legal system and capacity to determine what is permissible speech in their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
I suppose, you know, there are people, you know, I accept what the eSafety Commissioner is saying in terms of, yes, well, if people are using a VPN, the reality is, we have to, you know, there needs to be some control or some oversight of the content. And when the site owners don't do it, there is a role for the eSafety Commissioner, but it is a slippery path, isn't it? Because who then, you know, they decide what is acceptable content and what's not, and what's acceptable to them may not be acceptable to me or to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a really challenging thing about, I mean, it's an inherently challenging thing about living in a pluralist society, you know? I mean, there's a lot of things that I think you and I would probably deem hate speech that other people would deem reasonable political conversation and vice versa. So it is extremely challenging. And I think, you know, if you look at the countries who have fewer issues with this, they tend to be more culturally homogenous countries like Switzerland.
I think, you know, Elon Musk, you know, has done some incredible things through, you know, his companies. But I wonder, you know, his view on free speech. I haven't heard him speaking out about censorship and such matters in China or Russia.
Oh, he definitely has.
Has he?
I mean, he certainly has. But I think it's what it really comes down to is what he personally has control over.
Yeah.
And those are situations he can't personally do much about. Although I know that there are quite a lot of people in, I know Starlink, for example, is basically the entire Ukrainian media infrastructure at the moment is being run on Starlink. So
yeah.
he has had some role to play there. And I think, you know, you pointed out early on that he is a complicated figure in a lot of ways. And I think this kind of points to that. Because there are areas where there is kind of a deficit of free speech that could use that kind of, that could use a little bit more of that kind of energy, perhaps. I don't think Australia and the United States fit into that category, personally.
No.
And these are places that he does have quite a lot of control because his platform is extremely popular.
Yeah, interesting. I certainly wouldn't be giving Elon points, you know, to have lost somewhere between, you know, $3 and $8 billion on his investment since he bought it. Perhaps
I think it's pretty well accepted at this point that he's been a bit of a disaster of a CEO for both Twitter and Tesla.
Isn't that the issue about having, you know, a megalomaniac sort of billionaire who can afford to do such things? I mean, he had a stoush going on with X, and therefore he just decided, or Twitter, then decided
just
to buy it, exactly, which has turned into a financial disaster, but has given him a lot of political leverage and, you know, puts him squarely on the front stage. So I think, Dan, what you're saying is, you know, it's, you know, there are some jurisdictions around the world where maybe he's got a point, but certainly on this particular issue here in Australia, perhaps it's not the best negotiation for a fight with e-commissioner.
I mean, to put it really simply, I don't know why this is a hill you'd want to die on.
Yeah.
If we were talking about something that was in the realms of, this is information that people really need to be good democratic participants, and I'm going to protect that against censorship from the government, I'd be all on board with him.
Yeah.
I don't know why the free speech hill you want to die on is watching somebody get stabbed.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure the argument will continue for a while, but Dan, we're out of time with you. Thank you ever so much for joining us on Saturday Magazine this morning.
Really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely to talk to you folks.
Take care.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Paul. Stay with us. In just a moment, we're going to speak with Harriet Shing, the Minister for Equality, on a really important announcement the Minister was able to make yesterday. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.